All right. The next talk is about improving wheat competitiveness in soybean, screening tactics and traits of interest. Presenter is George T. Place, co-authors T. Carter Jr. and S. E. Reberg Horton.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is George Place, and I work at North Carolina State University with our organic grains specialist, Chris Reberg Horton. And as you may have guessed, organic production really is the impetus for this project in our interest in breeding for a more competitive soybean variety. In North Carolina, we have a strong organic egg and dairy industry. In fact, North Carolina hovers between number one and number two in organic egg production. And really, this is the sector, the fastest growing sector of the organic food industry. The organic soybean receives at least two times, sometimes two and a half times, the price of conventional beans. And so there is a great economic incentive. And in fact, the growers that we have doing this often say that they make a little bit more money on their organic acreage. Yet in North Carolina, we continue to import about $8 to $10 million in organic grains every year. Wheat competition is the main reason. You can see in this field that the pigweeds have gotten a little bit out of hand. With weed management being the number one challenge to organic producers, we really have to take a different approach to weed management in organic production. A lot of times this is thought of as a mini little hammers approach. In other words, lots of little tactics that are utilized to control weeds. If you think about a conventional soybean production system, there really is a sledgehammer approach to weed management. It's a very effective tool, and this constitutes the weed management program for Roundup Ready soybean. But with such tactic off the table in organic production, producers have to rely on many tactics or a mini little hammers approach to beat back the weeds. Each of these tactics individually isn't really going to have much of an effect, but cumulatively, these tactics are effective in an effective weed management system. And our project really wants to investigate the possibility that cultivar selection could be another management tactic for these growers. So if you think about breeding, it's often utilized. In fact, it's really the core of disease management programs and oftentimes utilized in insect management. And it's been demonstrated that there are, in fact, differences in competitive ability in soybean genotypes. And so the possibility that there could be a more competitive variety exists. So the objectives of this study were really, first, to quantify what are those differences in suppressive ability, and two, determine if competitiveness exists between soybean genotypes. How can breeders go into a large breeding population and best determine those more competitive genotypes? And finally, in identifying these genotypes, what are the traits of interest? How can we know where to take a breeding program, what crossing schemes may in fact result in the competitive variety that we're interested in? And so the materials and methods, we chose 30 soybean genotypes specifically for their varying seed morphology and leaf morphology. And we utilized tactics such as early and late overhead imaging, light measurements, and height measurements to investigate potential screening tactics. And I'll talk about a biomass harvest that we did of the soybeans and weeds. So here's the genotypes, and they're basically laid out in three main tests. This first grouping are genotypes varying in their seed size. The second group has varying leaf morphology. And finally, this last group has varying petiole and petiolial length. The experimental design, we had two locations one location in 2 years. Each location had 9 replications of the treatment. And the experimental design can probably best be explained as a stripped block split plot. Let me explain that with these diagrams. So here we have one replication in the field, and you can see on the bottom our test of the longer petiole and petiolial. So in order to achieve a weedy and weed-free comparison, we've got a strip in the field where we spray out AlloClor and create a weed-free environment, and right next to it we overseed for a weedy environment. Right there in the red would be one genotype allowing for a weedy, weed-free comparison. So we planted this trial with a cone planter, and as you can imagine in utilizing plant investigations, we've got a lot of germination variability, and so we adjusted the germination rates to achieve 468 live seed per plot. That's about 12 seed per row foot. And we loaded these envelopes, laid them out in the field, and then utilizing a highboy, you can see here on the left where we've turned on the nozzles and we're spraying out AlloClor for that weed-free strip. And right next to it, we've turned them off. In that strip, this will be our weedy strip, and we utilize this implement from the 1700s to spread out a pigweed sand mixture. Really what we're trying to do is inundate the weed seed bank in order to have a more uniform weed competition in this strip. It's pigweed chosen mainly because that's really the number one problem for our organic producers in the state. In-season traits that we measured, of course we had the seed weight, and then we measured these leaf characteristics, the petiole length as well as the petiolial length and the third leaflet length and width. So the screening methods that we investigated, the percent ground cover that I'll explain here both early and late, notice the early was only 2 weeks after emergence, and then light interception at 4 and 6 weeks after emergence. Height was a potential screening candidate, but it didn't really pan out very well. The light interception, you can see we've got simultaneous above and below light measurement. We utilize this custom-built stand in order to level those light wands, and of course that would give us a measurement of how much light each genotype canopy was intercepting. The percent ground cover screening tactic, you can see we took overhead images once again with a custom built stand, and we converted those images to black and white in Photoshop, and using a simple program it allowed us to get a ratio of black to white. This was our estimation of percent ground cover by the different genotype canopies. In season we kept between rows clean, and we only left the weeds right here in the soybean row directly competing with the soybean genotypes. And we didn't take this to yield. We did a biomass harvest at 7 weeks after emergence, and there are several reasons for this. First, with different maturity groups there could be some confounding factors, as well as potentially some different disease resistance or other differences between these genotypes that we really didn't want to confound the results. But the real reason that we wanted to end this experiment at 7 weeks after emergence is this graph here. If you can imagine a line showing, depicting the yield penalty the longer we leave weeds to compete with the soybeans, compared to the line where yields are of course increasing the longer we maintain these soybeans weed free. As you can see here, at about 50 days or 7 weeks, this line plateaus. This really is the critical period for weed competition. This was where we focused the experiment, and the reason being we wanted to maximize our ability to detect differences between these genotypes in their ability to compete with weeds. So at 7 weeks after emergence we trimmed these plots down to exactly 3 meters, and we utilized a forage harvester to cut the soybean genotypes at 5 centimeters above soil. We got the entire plot fresh biomass weight, and then we subsampled for a percent moisture to get dry biomass. In those strips where we had weeds growing with the soybeans, in every single plot, we separated out the soybean and weed biomass. It was over 2,000 plots. This girl actually tried to kill me on campus, but it was worth it because we got a very good data set. And I'm going to utilize this schematic to kind of orient you to the data set. Here on the right, we've got the biomass parameters we measured with that forage harvester. Here were our early and late screening tactics that we measured, and here were the in-season canopy measurements of the different genotypes. So for objective number one, were there differences between the genotypes in their ability to compete with weeds? We're going to look just at the weed biomass. Were there differences? So keep this in mind. Any genotype that had less weed biomass was rated as a more competitive genotype. For objective number two, what screening tactics could a breeder utilize to identify a more competitive genotype? We looked at how well each of these screening tactics was able to predict the amount of weed biomass associated with each genotype. And finally, in objective number three, what traits are involved? Once again, which of these canopy traits best predicted the weed biomass associated with the genotype at 7 weeks after emergence? So the analysis for objective number one was a straightforward analysis of variance. We utilized PROC-MIX. PROC-REG, or multiple regression, was utilized for objectives two and three, and I'll explain that in a few graphs. But first, let me get to objective number one. Were there differences between the genotypes? In 2007, you can see some of our least competitive genotypes up here compared to the most competitive. This genotype had about 40% less weed biomass associated with it. So there were definitely differences. This is a grouping of genotypes differing in their seed size. That same grouping showed differences in 2008, as well as the genotype grouping that differed on their petiole lengths. We see differences in weed biomass. So there were differences. Objective number two, how could a breeder detect those differences in a breeding population? To do this, we utilized a model selection criteria for the multiple regression models. And these model criteria selection were based on really three things. First, the lack of fit, which models were showing the best R-square. And of course, all parameters in the model needed to be significant. Our cutoff was at a p-value of less than 0.1. And finally, we utilized the information criteria, the Schwartz-Bayesian criteria. The lowest SBC model was shown to be the best model. And a little bit about this information criteria. For optimal model selection, we use the SBC, and it considers two things: the lack of fit and the number of parameters. And what we're looking for is a model that's going to show the lowest SBC value. If you think about it, we could add everything into the model and we're going to get the best R-square. But maybe several of those parameters really aren't significant. So you see in the first part of this SBC, we've got the lack of fit, and here is a penalty for each additional parameter. So this model criteria allows us to know what parameters in a model are most significant, most contributing to that competitive ability. In 2007, in trying to model the best screening tactic, it was a very straightforward selection. That early image taken just at 2 weeks after emergence was best at predicting that lowest weed biomass. You can see the relationship was actually not bad at all. A few outliers were bringing down that R-square, but on the bottom is the percent ground cover, that black to white ratio from those photos that we took of the different genotypes. And of course on our y-axis is the decreasing weed biomass. Pretty well predicted by the photos. In 2008, once again, the best model was involving that early photograph, and the R-square tightened up quite a bit. This was very promising. This is an easy screening tactic. We could do this in less than 10 seconds once we got some momentum in the field. So this was identified as our best screening tactic for identifying those competitive genotypes. Finally, what traits were involved? In 2007, there were two main traits coming up in the model selection, the third leaflet length and seed size. And you can see here from the model, on the z-axis, a decreasing leaflet length and an increasing seed size was predicting a lower weed biomass. But you can see here, we've got one genotype that was very competitive with a short leaflet length and large seed that may be throwing off the model. I removed that genotype and re-ran the model, and the model held. And so in smoothing that data, you could see the model was predicting a shorter leaflet length and a larger seed would result in a more competitive genotype. In 2008, the traits involved were a little bit more complicated, but the largest component of that R-square was being predicted by the seed size. So if we just simplify this model, it was the fifth lowest SBC, so not our best model, but in honing in on a trait of interest, you can see that seed size seems to be pretty significant. Genotypes with larger seeds were resulting in less weed biomass associated with the canopy at the end of the critical period for weed competition. So in conclusion, We did detect differences between genotypes. Other research groups have also identified differences. And for breeders in screening for such genotypes, overhead photography seems to be a promising screening tactic at 2 weeks after emergence. Finally, of the agronomic traits that we investigated, seed size seems to be most contributing to the competitive ability of these genotypes. So we've got some future research planned, including the inclusion of hundreds of more genotypes to screen. And we're also beginning some advanced line yield testing in the weedy organic conditions. At some point, we may be interested in trying to include some below ground traits into the model of competitiveness. Allelopathic qualities have been identified in some genotypes, so it may be worthwhile to improve the model with such characteristics. Some of the references throughout my presentation, and I acknowledge these groups for funding this research, and I'll open the discussion up to any questions that you might have if we've got time.
Thank you very much.